You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is Rational Revolution. I am most certainly not Mark Becker. I am Jerry Bader sitting in, Pastor Jerry Bader. Heavy emphasis on the Pastor Jerry Bader to make a differentiation of a radio Jerry Bader you may have known a lifetime ago that doesn't exist. And it is weird and exciting to be in a radio studio again, in that order. Weird and exciting. And Mark's on vacation. And Mark specifically asked me to step in to talk about something that is going on in my ministry. I'm pastor at Samaritan's Heart Mission Church, and there's not going to be a lot of preacher talk, I promise. I didn't say none. I said there wouldn't be a lot. And one of the things that we have done recently is started, I am calling it a new ministry or a new effort, a peer support group called, ours is called Peace, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement. And we are affiliated with PLACE, Parents Living After Adult Child Estrangement. And we had our first meeting on May 8th, and it was powerful, it was emotional, it was difficult. But in advance of that, I promoted this effort. And by the way, I probably should quick get my backstory in. My wife and I, our daughter, 4 years ago when she was 28, walked out of our lives with a text. And there, contrary to what a lot of haters on Facebook said, no, there was no advance warning. There were no conversations. She was just gone. And it was that experience that brought me to Brian Briscoe. I read about him in the New York Times last year. Brian, as I mentioned, started PLACE, Parents Living After Child Estrangement. When his daughter exited their life, he and his wife, and in 2022. And this year was tweaked to double back and track down Brian in that story. Connected with him on the day I connected with him, he was holding a Zoom to talk with others who wanted to start this type of in-person. Brian's support group is entirely virtual. We're looking at in-person, and through, quite frankly, Brian's mentorship and tutelage, we made that happen on May 8th. So when Mark asked me to fill in, I reached out to Brian. I said, this is a great opportunity. And Mark, you know, saw everything on Facebook, all the hate, all the vitriol, and you know, this is an opportunity to talk about it. So joining me now from Texas is Brian Briscoe. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good morning. Fine. Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You and I, of course, have talked a lot about this. February 26th, believe it or not, is when we first connected. So it's several months already. We've been talking about this. Brian, I very quickly told a little bit of your story. Talk about, you know, a couple of minutes, your personal experience and how that led to PLACE.
Sure. I suppose it was late August or September of 2022 when my daughter departed with a note. And of course, there's a lot more to that. But in the ensuing 5 or 6 months, I had a real emotional downward spiral. And I was rather shocked at the dearth of available services locally. I sought counselors, I sought peer support, and there wasn't any such thing. And, you know, as a counselor by profession, you know, I've started any number of programs for, you know, drug and alcohol treatment centers, for law enforcement. And I thought, okay, well, I guess this is to be considered marching orders. I've started programs before. Let's start one now. And it started with a pretty awkward TikTok live. We'd had a spring storm. We had no power. I rented a cheap hotel room so that I could have internet, had a TikTok live event, 700 participants. And I thought, okay, wow, we're onto something. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and you and I have talked about this, and you know, there are numbers out there anywhere from 27 to 40%. I actually believe in terms of families impacted, I believe it's higher than that. And certainly we have seen that, you know, and quite frankly, the you know, I posted this on my own social media, on the church social media, but then I also posted it on two large Green Bay focused groups, and did a video, about a 4-minute video explaining this, Brian, and that got thousands, probably got 10,000 views by now, I don't know, but just it generated so much hate. And the theme was that it is accepted as fact that parents are always responsible. No sane adult child is going to leave just, you know, cavalierly without valid reason. So if your child left you, it's your fault. Is that one of the things you address, that perception? Do you address that in place?
I do, and we encounter that quite a bit. And, you know, if you work in this field, if you're a mental health professional, if you've seen a counselor, you may be familiar with the fact that we make note of absolutes. If someone sits in session and says, this always happens, this never happens, well, there's, you know, an emotional fallout from that. The same thing. It doesn't even withstand fundamental scrutiny to say, well, here are 27 people in a group, and all of you are abusers and monsters. Mm. Now, just for a moment, if I put out some clarion call, all right, we're having monsters and abusers are us, everybody come on down. What's the likelihood that I could successfully gather exclusively a group of such people? It really doesn't make much sense. Now, let me just plant a little seed here. Mm. I don't plan to spend our time exclusively on the defensive.
Right, right.
They have a perspective. Something got them here. Some bad experience. This is their reality. And I don't mean to negate that at all. If somebody's angry at me on social media, in the rare instances in which I've engaged, I've thought, well, I don't think they're doing this out of meanness. This is pain. It may be projection, but this starts from someplace that they feel is legitimate.
Yeah, and I would, and I agree with you that that's not where we're going to take the bulk of the time. But I do want to say this is, you know, in our ministry, and I know you're familiar with this, hurt people, healed people, and free people. What I would say to those folks, many of them who have estranged from their parents, you may be liberated from your parents, but I didn't hear a lot of freedom. I didn't hear a lot of free people, people that were free from pain and hurt. And that breaks my heart. I actually feel for them. So I wanted to get that out there, and I may say that in another venue as well. So let's now get to, so you form place, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this question. Maybe I have, or maybe you answered it. It's virtual. Was there any reason you didn't start brick and mortar that in person, or was it just a matter of logistics?
Oh my gosh. If I may be painfully honest, this is an idea, a need, a demand. This succeeds in spite of me, not because of me. I'm a lot of things. I'm not a good promoter. Anybody who's seen my social media will understand that. I had an offer of a venue or two, and my efforts at, you know, putting people in seats just didn't gain traction.
Okay.
And it's as simple as that. I probably could still make it happen if I had any competence in that area. But virtually, there was a flood of people. I mean, you know, really initially far more than I could handle. So that kind of took care of itself.
And so there you go. And so talk about what does happen at place. I'm sure there's no such thing, because I know what happened our first night. I know there's no such thing as a typical session, but if you a general idea of what you are trying to accomplish, how you're trying to help people at place.
Yes, thank you. You know, I've run a lot of groups in my career, and place is especially rewarding. Place running groups is like raising children, you know. Surface level, you can say, well, it's the same thing again and again, but it's not. Our groups, literally from group to group, 1 week, everybody, it appears, is angry. One week, people want to talk about practical matters such as wills and estates. One week, they're talking about their needs regarding social support. One week, they're talking about how's my health and is my current health state a result of what's going on, or has it factored into this? It's as if each group has its own personality, its own dynamic. A common complaint we got early on was that we were echo chambers and we did nothing but complain. And in the last group, I said, okay, complain if you want to. But we do so much more than that. We have limited avenues for this. If I'm sitting in the barber's chair talking to my best friend and I want to talk about this, you, even the people who love you most, really seem to be capable of pretty limited engagement on this topic. So we perhaps are a pretty rare avenue for getting it out, for processing, for venting. But we do far more than complain. We've had estate attorneys guest with us to explain the practicalities of what to do with your will, your trust, et cetera, et cetera. We cover a wide range of stuff.
So yours, and you and I really haven't had a chance to talk about that. So, and again, that's the perception from the outside that folks had, that it would just be a gripe session. And on our first night, Brian, be clear, there were people who came to be very critical of their children, and I talked about that and how we navigate that. But it's something that it's funny that Ramona and I, my wife Ramona, haven't really talked about that because we have dealt with those practicality matters. If the child you're estranged from, if you had made them the executor of your will and power of attorney of something, okay, now that's probably not a practicality. So a couple minutes in this segment, that how much of that, because I never really thought about that, how much is that become more and more frequent, those type of life after the child, you know, navigation?
Oh my gosh, yes, the practical stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of similarity between estrangement and addiction. The addict may take on a drug or alcohol habit and say, it's my choice. I know what I'm doing. This affects only me. And there are these concentric ripples of influence and consequence that occur afterwards. We have people in groups saying, I'm still paying for their cell phone, or they may not know their health insurance has ended, or I got a notice that they got a traffic ticket. It came here. From little stuff like that to, you know, I got it. One of them, I think, got a notice that their child's college scholarship had a problem. And of course, there's stuff with wills and estates. And exactly like you said, this was the executor, and now this child has estranged. What do we do about it?
All right. I'm Jerry Bader with Brian Briscoe, and we are talking about child family estrangement, rational revolution.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says body's too old.
Pastor Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker, Rational Revolution. I thank Mark. Boy, it is just still really weird to be in a radio studio. I don't think I forgot how to do this, so that's kind of cool. And talking with Brian Briscoe, who has become a friend, and he is the founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement. I latched onto that in 2024 from a New York Times article several years after our daughter, at 28 at the time, now nearly 32, estranged from us. And in the last segment, Brian and I were talking about some of the blowback that these groups get and then some of the practical things. And I want to just walk through, you created a list of 12 principles, Brian, and anyone who has been in a support group, recovery support group, are familiar, most have some type of 12 principles. But I think you did an outstanding job with these. And I want to walk through just some of them. We are grounded in a set of guiding principles that shape our time together. There is life during estrangement, and we intend to live that life, which that statement assumes that some people aren't. I mean, that some people really got stuck, right, in that moment. Talk about that.
Oh, yes. You know, there's a phrase from dialectical behavior therapy, which was created by Marsha Linehan. It's a term called radical acceptance. And it's basically saying in our grief, in our ambiguous grief, it is in our best interest to accept, like it or not, this is our reality. And that's a pivotal point, because people can get stuck in the, this is wrong, this shouldn't have happened. And they're kind of constantly in that mental, you know, movie in their minds about what happened and what didn't happen. And that leaves them, you know, stewing in, you know, resentments and how unfair it is. And if we can at least work on radical acceptance and say, like it or not, this has occurred, it's where I am, and the sun keeps rising, I keep getting out of bed, what do I do with this post-estrangement life? It serves us better.
So one of the things that we got up here in Green Bay with Peace, parents empowered after child estrangement, some folks were surprised, almost kind of asked the why. Why aren't you about reconciliation? How do you answer that question if you ever got that?
To be quite transparent, when I came into this in March of 2023, I hired some folks to help me. And right out of the gate, really some sharp minds around me said, you're a counselor, now you're the expert in this, let's go. And I thought, I'm very much not the expert in this. And in fact, at that point, I was becoming familiar, especially with Joshua Coleman. And I thought, this is the authority. He's got that covered. If you want good guidance, go to Dr. Joshua Coleman. His Rules of Estrangement book is fantastic. It was clear to me in that moment, there isn't enough regarding people's need to cope. That was an unmet need. And I'm simply here to roll up my sleeves and get down to the business of getting through this day. I don't have the magic that allows you. I don't know the magic that allows you to reconcile with your child. I read his book. I occasionally speak to him about it, but I feel my place in this is coping.
And so near the end of our session, and the first, I'll tell you, Brian, our first session basically was, you know, there were 15 of us representing 17 with Ramon and me, representing 11 families. And what I basically did is let them talk. And a lot of them, Brian, had never said this out loud to anyone. So it was, it's going to be different going forward. And I told them that, but I didn't really have much of a stopwatch. I hour and a half going around and letting them do that. Near the end, then when we wrapped up, was, you know, the goal is to live that life and have peace. And this woman tearing up said, is that really possible? Are you telling me this can really happen? And I'm going to be candid. I would give myself an F minus. I just wasn't prepared. And I said, yes, it can, because I didn't know what else to say. If you were, I need a teacher here. What, Brian, would you have done in that situation?
I like to do what we call rolling with resistance. You know, there are holes in every game, every philosophy, every martial arts technique. There's a weakness somewhere. And when somebody says a thing that you're not prepared for, go with it. Oh, I hear what you're saying. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And in fact, you as a mother, well, now that we're talking about it, surely much of your identity to this point has been built upon being a mother. And with that gone, who are you? What are you? How can you proceed? And with any luck, you have an example to pull from. You, in the moment, have somebody else jumping in to offer words of encouragement, something that is practical, something to try. We don't have any magic. We don't have any advice across the board, but we'll keep throwing what we can at this. And we find here and there that things do work and things help.
Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker, talking with Brian Briscoe, founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement. And Brian helped us found at Samaritan's Heart Mission Church in Green Bay, Peace, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement. Another one of your guiding principles, we seek accountability, not blame. Make the distinction between the two.
Well, blame comes with an emotional component. Blame comes with, you know, I'm angry, this is your fault. It can come with hate, vitriol. You know, I had a client not long ago beautifully say that hate is like a room that's on fire and you've chosen to open the door. And when you introduce that into the process of trying to figure that out, it colors everything. If we can remove ourselves at all, if we can put any emotional distance between us and the business of connecting the dots, we do a far better job. And that process is accountability. Okay, this accounts for that. This caused that. This is how these are connected. And it helps us understand if we could try, and I know that's a lofty goal, if we could try to do this and keep our, you know, negative emotional responses out of it.
Just under 2 minutes in this segment, one of the next ones, we offer support, not advice. Again, same thing, distinction. What does support look like? What does advice look like?
Oh, support is validating, hearing, processing together. Support is beautiful. Advice is a slippery slope because what works for me might be a poor fit for you. If I have blanket advice, let's go back to, say, estates and wills and such. My advice is you do this. Well, there's so much variation from situation to situation, state to state, and certainly so many variations among our clientele, whether it be race, socioeconomic status, number of children, adopted children, is there substance abuse in the mix? Is there mental health pathology, either for the parents or the children? Blanket advice does us all a disservice.
Talking with Brian Briscoe, founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement, on Rational Revolution, and Pastor Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker. In our next segment, we do not indulge in denial. And one of the things I noticed at our first session was buckets and buckets of shame. And we'll get to that straight ahead.
We'll have more coming up in just a bit on The Silent Epidemic with Pastor Jerry Bader and Brian Briscoe. But stand by for a special interview with Mark Becker and Senator Tammy Baldwin next on The Rational Revolution.
Welcome back to The Rational Revolution. We got a break in your programming to bring you an amazing, amazing guest, your friend and mine, who needs no introduction, Senator Tammy Baldwin. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome back. It's so good to see you and to talk to you again. How's everything going? Like, that's a loaded question.
Well, you know, I will tell you that we were warned by Steve Bannon, Steve Miller, the Steves, as I call them, who advised President Trump, that we should expect them to flood the zone.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I think we've all been experiencing. And, you know, when you're being flooded, it's, you know, you have to first tread water and then you have to get your, you got to get into your swing, and I think we're getting there. But boy, it has been quite the first 100 days, and which I would characterize a lot as broken promises. Because as we know, Donald Trump, he was on the campaign trail. He's like, on day one, I'm going to lower costs. On day one, I'm going to end all wars. On day one, I'm going to do all of this. And not only has he sort of betrayed those promises and the people, but he's in many cases, in a calculated way, done just the opposite, especially on costs with his trade wars and tariffs and that sort of thing. So, I mean, where to begin? But it has been a lot of broken promises.
I don't have a ton of notes because I knew it was going to, like, I knew it was going to be bad, but did you really, I didn't know it was going to be this bad. Did you?
No, I did not know it was going to be this bad. And I had a sense of what flood the zone meant,
yeah,
right? That we would see in rapid succession all sorts of announcements and nominations and executive orders and proposals. And but just the sheer volume and, you know, the fact that, you know, we've seen more executive orders signed in the first 100 days than any other president. By a big factor, not just, yeah, you know, he beat the second place one by three executive orders, right?
And, right.
And we've seen, it's like a 24/7 thing also. We always used to joke about the announcements that would be made in government after work on a Friday.
It was, yeah, take out the trash.
Didn't want to get any, yes, media attention, yes, because doesn't everyone go home at Friday, you know, on Friday evening, and then they have the weekend, right? The type of major announcements that we were hearing on Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and I think of so many of them, you know, I try to get home every weekend when I can after session, get back to Wisconsin and travel around the state. And the things I would hear about when I was back in the state, and people would be saying, you know, what do you mean they're going to cut these research dollars to our universities? What do you mean that they're going to freeze federal funding? And there's no one to call back in Washington to, right, to say, you know, Secretary Kennedy, what do you mean when they say that people can't access their Head Start dollars? Yeah. Can they open on Monday or not? And it has been a sort of combination of this steady flurry, including in non-business hours, and also in many ways an intentional stonewalling of information.
Yeah.
So I'm on two different committees that oversee some aspect of the Health and Human Services Department. And, you know, they announced that they're going to fire hundreds of scientists. Can we get any information at all about what divisions or agencies they're being fired at? Is it all on NIH? Can we get any information when the city of Milwaukee, which is conferring with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about lead levels in their public schools? Can we get any information when they call over there and they can't respond because they have fired every lead, yeah, expert in that office? And these are just little, you know, there's hundreds of these examples, and it's more than frustrating because it's downright harmful and cruel.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I talked to a woman named Christina Dry, and she was worked for USAID. And she was like the big speech writer and communications person. And the stories that she said on this program about what happened, and they were the first agency that went through this. And the standing on the global stage is gone. You know, in the first 100 days, Donald Trump has tanked virtually every major market in the world. And, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of jobs being cut, and we're less safe on everything from storm forecasting to travel to cybersecurity. What can Democrats do about it?
Well, we have to fight on all fronts. And so I'll start with my alliteration.
Yeah.
When they violate the Constitution, when they violate the law, we got to fight in the courts.
Yeah.
And there's over 200 cases right now on almost every illegal thing that he's done.
Good.
And you know what? At the trial court level, we're winning by and large. Most of those cases, when they're finally heard, they're saying, oh, you've got to rehire those people you, yeah, fired on the Valentine's Day massacre. Now, it's clumsy because it sometimes takes a while, and then are all those people available to be hired back, et cetera. But we gotta keep to the rule of law. And when he violates it, when he overreaches, we need to make sure that we go into court. There's some that we can do to fight back in Congress. In Congress, you know, Republicans, same party as the president, control both houses of Congress. So that makes it challenging. But we have had just a couple of early glimmers of hope where in the Senate, a handful of my Republican colleagues have voted with the Democrats to stand up to this administration. Now, we need to see a lot more of this, and people can help by making sure that when you call me, also call Ron Johnson, and you know, yeah. And also call your House member, whether Democrat or Republican. But by way of example, the tariffs, a lot of people think that there was a huge overreach with regard to the tariffs. And we had a vote in the Senate to get rid of the emergency declaration that President Trump used to justify his tariffs with Canada, a huge trading partner. Right. In fact, was number one trading partner. We actually won that vote. And unfortunately, the House didn't take it up. But we got to build on that, you know, that we found a few Republicans who are willing to stand up to the president. We need to find a few more. We need to rise the pressure. And then it's our constituents. So courts, Congress, our constituents, standing alongside our constituents who are organizing to fight the worst of these actions. And not only the ones that have already been taken, but the ones that we're hearing about that will be taken in the future, like during this budget reconciliation process, these proposed cuts to Medicaid. People are organizing, saying hands off Medicaid. I'm doing a lot of that organizing when I go home, and I have roundtables on that topic and hear from people who rely on Medicaid or who have children with disabilities who rely on Medicaid to be safe and healthy. And so that part is really important also. In states and localities where there are actions that can be taken at the state or local level, that's another way to fight back. And so we have to pull together, and it's Democrats, but it's also independents. And again, those Republicans who have the courage to stand up against this president when he has overreached or done become involved in unconstitutional activity or illegal activity.
You know, and we're here in the 8th Congressional District, and we have someone who we don't really know where he is, in Tony Weed. And what's neat is when you come home, you talk to people. What are you hearing from the people of Wisconsin when you talk to them?
Yeah, well, let me before I answer what I'm hearing when I'm at home, I just want to mention that like a year ago, on average, I might get between 50 and 100 calls a day.
Okay.
During this moment, during these first 100 days, it was not at all unusual for us to get over 1,000 phone calls a day.
Come on.
I know.
Really?
And I try to track, my staff who are answering the phones, what are you hearing on the phones? And they'll give me like, here are the top five issues that
That's
we're hearing
crazy.
About. And yeah, but you're saying, so what do you hear? So I want to say that I'm hearing also from people who call in or email in, not just the ones who, you know, attend a roundtable, et cetera. And so, it varies. Like sometimes it's the outrage of the week. When Doge came into the Treasury Department and stole their Treasury database that has almost every transaction, financial transaction that the United States government participates in, people were terrified. What does that mean? What sort of insights do they have about me? And then when they continued to steal other databases and data, people got worried about their medical information and their social security numbers. And so we got a surge of calls around that. By way of just one example. But as I'm traveling the state, I would say two of the key issues right now are protecting and fighting against efforts to steal people's health care away, to jeopardize the Social Security program that people paid into over their lifetime and want to know will be there in their retirement. They also want to know that if they have questions, the phones there will be answered, or that they can get through to somebody to help answer questions or process cases. So people are talking a lot about that. And then the tariffs. When the president has said across the board, I don't care if you're enemy or ally, adversary or best friend, tariffs across the board. And small businesses started realizing what part of their supply chain, what they sourced from overseas versus domestically. Our farmers who get so much of their inputs from Canada, like their fertilizers and other components, and those who have built up export markets, but now know that with retaliatory tariffs, those are probably foreclosed to them. People were so scared. And, you know, most of the jobs created in America are created by small businesses. And we have so many business leaders in Wisconsin who wonder if they'll survive a trade war.
Right.
And wonder if they'll have to, become smaller and lay people off or raise prices and then maybe have customers who can't afford them anymore. And if this is something that might lead to a recession, then families are going to be worried about their budgets and how far they'll stretch. And they're not going to patronize some of these small businesses like restaurants or bars or, stores where they might buy things beyond the absolute necessities. Mm-hmm. So it has such ramifications.
Yeah, it's really, we got about 45 seconds left. How does this get better? And if, I know we can't say that in 45 seconds, but what do we do?
Well, just people have to know their power. You know, there was a previous Trump presidency and he tried to take away the Affordable Care Act. And people rallied and people wrote and people organized. And alongside our constituents, we won that battle. And we're going to stand up and fight back against so many of these proposals that are outright cruel and harm people. And we're going to try to be as successful as we possibly can while preserving and protecting our very democracy at the same time.
Those little things like that. Yes.
Know your power. Everyone has power.
That's a special interview with Rational Revolution host Mark Becker and Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. We'll return with more discussion on the silent epidemic with Pastor Jerry Bader and Brian Briscoe next on Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Take Rational Revolution with you anywhere. Log on civicmedia.us/shows or listen to Rational Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Rational Revolution, Pastor Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker. We are talking with Brian Briscoe, friend, founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement. Those of us, and that includes my wife, Ramona, and me, have had an adult child estranged. And Brian, in 2022, after that happened in his family, founded PLACE, Parents Living After Child Estrangement. And through his mentorship, his tutelage, we have started a peer support group at Samaritan's Heart Mission Church, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement, or PEACE. And let's pick up, Brian, with the some of the 12 principles. We won't get through all of them. But we do not indulge in denial. Denial of what? Explain that.
Both ways. Denial of our part in this. We don't indulge in denial of their part in this. One of our early criticisms was that we are an echo chamber and that we do nothing but deny. And I've got to say, I know this is anecdotal, but you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people have been through our groups. If anything, it's the opposite. People come in taking perhaps far more blame than is necessary, than is accurate. You know, again, we got mothers and fathers saying, this happened. It must be me. I'm uncertain, but I must be the epicenter of what caused this. And we frequently see this progression where they start off saying that, And then as they process this through a number of weeks and get input from their peers, they say, well, it's really not that simple. And, you know, for me to have such power and sway over somebody, that doesn't withstand much scrutiny. You know, the times I've wanted to influence them and tried, well, that failed. So they really worry themselves perhaps a bit too much about that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. And that, if I can just put a word in your mouth, that somewhat self-condemnation, what we noticed in the first session, Brian, is I told people, you know, we saw every emotion, shame, guilt, anger, resentment, confusion. Shame was big. Shame, you know, and again, those who had never spoken of this aloud, you know, that speaks to that shame. And once the spigot opened, Brian, and that's where I was not too quick to cut people off, is they just needed to talk about it. If someone listening to this is like, wow, you know, this happened to me and I didn't know that there was something like this, you know, they're going to, that will be encouraging. But if they hear that, yeah, I'm engulfed in that shame, why wouldn't I feel shame? What's the only way to get an F in parenting is for your child to estrange from you. How do you have specific approaches to dealing with people's shame in this particular topic?
Absolutely. And this comes out of my profession, counseling. You know, if somebody has that negative thought, I'm a failure as a parent or what have you, all right? Remember that shame is feeling bad about what you are. Guilt is feeling badly about what you've done. We certainly get quite a mix of both. But if somebody is saying, I'm a failure as a parent, well, okay, that's a horrible thing. Let's take those thoughts to court. What's the evidence here? Mm. Across your lifespan, across your social connections, across everything that you know, everything you've done, what is the evidence that you're horrible at this? Now, understand, okay, we have any number of parents that I think are below the trauma threshold. I was raised by somebody who was neglectful, abusive, abandoned me. I'm an estranged adult child. I don't think the parents who do that to their children show up, okay? I think we have a bunch of people on a bell curve who made normal mistakes. And the people on the bell curve who made normal mistakes, when analyzing the evidence, the data over the course of their lives, just can't make an airtight argument that they are this sort of failure. Mistakes, yes, but mistakes that rise to the level of we're never talking again, I'm not so sure about that. I think in some instances, it's an overreaction.
Refitting that perspective, how important is that to beginning the healing process?
Oh, it's crucial because, you know, this wonderful neuroplasticity in our brains, the things we think repeatedly reinforce themselves and they effectively become ruts. And when you train yourself to catch this thought and counter it with evidence or counter it with another tool, you can pull out of that rut and that begins that healing process. And it's slow. It's like steering a barge. You know, you ended up going this direction slowly and methodically, and the business of changing it takes work. That's the work of counseling.
And so I kind of skipped over one, and I probably shouldn't have, and we'll double back. We do not dwell in the past. Everything you just talked about, Brian, I spent the first 2 years racking my brain. What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? As a pastor, this is something that I deal with in counseling people. If for me, it's a spiritual thing. If you say you have made this decision in your life concerning Christ, you shouldn't have to worry about the past anymore. But whether someone's done that or not, dwelling in the past is never a good idea because we can't change it. But I didn't just dwell in the past. I was an archaeologist of myself. I went and dug into the past. Talk about that.
Well, we call this ambiguous grief. Like I lost my father a couple of years ago, and I'm certain that at least, you know, in this lifetime, I won't see him again. my father is gone, whereas I have an estranged adult child who's out there. There's this ambiguity of not knowing whether or not we will ever reunite. But that's not the only thing about this that is ambiguous. We deal with the uncertainty. What did I do? Where's the answer? How do the dots connect? And we can make ourselves quite distressed when trying to piece that together. And it makes sense that we go there because we're also trying to learn. What was the mistake? Where did I go wrong? How do I not do this again? And there's a line. There's, you know, normal analysis and trying to figure it out and learn, but then we can cross over into being obsessed with it. And here comes, you know, the negative impact on our thinking and the difficulty that we have pulling out of that.
All right. So, Todd, we just have 1 minute left, period, right? On the show.
That's correct.
All right. So then we need to, Brian, the website where they can find place.
It is copingplace.net.
And I encourage that. I'm sending people there that can't make our brick and mortar meeting. But if you want to try shgb.org, shgb.org. Brian Briscoe, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Thank you.
And thanks to Mark Becker for letting me do this.
Me and my Bobby, from the Kentucky.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.